Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014. Transparency International report says South Sudan is among the most corrupt nations in the world.
Business executives who have operations in South Sudan and who are actually, like, you know, experiencing or interacting with governments as part of that business operation.
And senior members of the SPLM in opposition are meeting this week in Upper Nile State.
We are just waiting for the two governors and some military command, and then we start our meeting coming 2 days. And after meeting, we continue for 3 days, and then the peace talks delegation will go back to Addis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. That's according to Transparency's International Annual Corruption Perceptions Index, which was released today. South Sudan ranks fifth from the bottom on the corruption index. It is slightly less corrupt than Iraq, slightly more corrupt than Afghanistan, and ranks 2 places above neighboring Sudan. Santosh Srinivasan is the lead researcher on the Corruption Perceptions Index. He says Transparency International talks on businessmen and country experts in the 175 countries that are included in the annual index.
It could be, for example, experts who are based in the World Bank South Sudan, or business executives who have operations in South Sudan and who are actually, experiencing or interacting with governments as part of their business operations. And the CPI captures the perceptions of these people.
Srinivasan says the index captures
the mix of both the international community's perceptions of South Sudan as well as South Sudanese citizens, because the business executives are often people who are in South Sudan and doing business there, and it involves also South Sudanese.
Srinivasan says the way Transparency International compiles the index is also the biggest source of criticism that the organization gets from foreign governments.
The most common criticism that we receive for the CPI is that, this is the perceptions of experts, and the index carries a foreign elite bias, if you could say that.
Srinivasan rejects that criticism.
Our analysis and our research shows that there is not much evidence to the claim made by governments. The CPI scores are often highly correlated with bribery rates, and the expert perceptions of countries are also highly correlated with general public's perceptions of corruption levels in that government.
Transparency International says that countries at the bottom of the index, like South Sudan, need to take radical steps to fight corruption. They warn that bribes and backdoor deals don't just steal resources from the most vulnerable, but also undermine justice and economic development and destroy trust in the government.
The government of South Sudan is critical of Transparency International's ranking the young nation as one of the most corrupt countries in the world. Information Minister Michael Makuei says bringing peace to South Sudan is a priority of his government and should be the priority of the international community as well, not measuring corruption. He also tells VOA fellow Nabil Biagio that the report reflects the opinion of a few individuals in South Sudan, not the entire nation.
The report of Transparent International is their report. That is a report which is prepared by individuals, is not substantiated. It is individual opinions which are just compiled, and they are said to be a report of an organization. It's mere opinions expressed by people. They don't substantiate them. They come and conduct researches without even the involvement of the person concerned, or they don't even submit a report to that person so that he can respond to it. I really doubt the credibility of the report.
It's usually based on the perceptions of the public about how corrupt the public sector is in a particular country. They speak to certain individuals, and based on the public trust in government and leaders in the country, they submit this report.
Well, yes, they talk to individuals in those countries. Those individuals, what is the criteria for their selection? Out of, say, 100, if you can interview 10, these 10 may be people who have their own intentions, their own opinion, and as such, they are ready to say whatever. The other 90, which you left out, may be the people who, if you were to talk to them, they would have reversed the whole thing. So this issue of random selection does not at times send a clear message about whatever is written there.
So if we put this report aside for a bit, observers say signs of corruption in South Sudan are all around, like poor schools, inhibited economic growth, poor service delivery, and all of that.
But they may not necessarily be because of corruption. It could be because of inexperience. It could be for any other reason. It may be because of misplacement of funds and spending the funds on other issues other than concentrating on other issues and so forth. That is one. Number two, the question of priorities is not the decision of everybody. It is not anybody in the international community that must come and determine the priorities of X or Y. It is X or Y who determines what are his or her priorities. So the fact that there is a poor educational system, there are no proper health services, does not necessarily mean corruption.
You talked about the priority of the country. What do you say the priority of the country of South Sudan?
The priorities of the country are in our program, our program, and they are very clear. We have clearly stated them, except that we have been interrupted by war. Now those are priorities. Now is how do you bring peace to South Sudan, not anything else. Because if you begin to talk of schools which were just destroyed by the rebels, then what do? The best thing is to bring peace, and whatever you find, you spend it on peace, and after that, then you begin to talk of other issues.
But don't you see it a problem that there is little public trust in government and leaders in South Sudan?
There is absolute trust in the people, in the leadership, the government of South Sudan. This is why the government is continuing. How did you conclude that? If you say there is little trust, which means that the government is not enjoying any trust, this is absolutely rubbish.
It says here in the report, countries at the bottom of the list, like South Sudan, need to adopt radical anti-corruption measures in favor of their people. So what is the government of South Sudan doing?
In case of any corruption, we will address it when we have reached peace. Now, you cannot just talk to us on other issues meanwhile we are. We have our own priorities. Our priority at present is peace.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makui speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biagio from Juba this past hour. A senior member of the rebels of the SPLM in opposition says his group is serious about ending the conflict in South Sudan. Deputy spokesman for SPLM in opposition, Manoa Peter Gatkwot, says the leadership of the rebel group is meeting this week in Pagak in Upper Nile to discuss power-sharing proposal and other outstanding issues before returning to Ethiopia to continue with negotiations. He says his group is proposing a solution to the conflict.
We agree that we need to take the power-sharing proposal from the IGAD to our membership of the movement in the ground. So we call meeting in Fagak, one of the liberated area, membership of the movement coming from all 10 states, also from diaspora. The meeting is to come and discuss issues regarding power-sharing between the regime in Juba and SPLM, SPLA. In opposition.
The last IGAD meeting gave you 2 weeks to resolve your differences, and the 2 weeks elapsed. When Juba was asked, they are saying you are the one delaying the process. When are you coming back to the negotiating table?
Actually, we will come back to the negotiation table after we finish this consultation meeting in Fagak. But the problem is from Juba side, because the president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, refused to allow UN to take to facilitate the command of SPLM, SPLA. We are just waiting for the two governors and some military command, and then we start our meeting coming 2 days. And after meeting, we will continue for 3 days, and then the peace talk delegation will go back to Addis, and the others will remain here to discuss some issues regarding the organization and the movement.
Let's make the point clear here. You are in Pagak to meet with your leadership so that you can explain to them the proposed power-sharing deal. That the issue of the powers of the prime minister is still outstanding. Juba is saying they're not going to accept a prime minister that has executive powers. Is that what the SPLM in opposition is accepting?
Actually, when we finished the meeting in Addis Ababa, we put the areas that we disagree with the government and the areas that we agree. First of all, we are the one who advised to have the two armies, separate army. Selfa will command the army, SPLA army, and Victor Rek Mashaka will command his army. There's some areas will divide the war between the president and the prime minister. But issues of Juba to defeat prime minister without executive power, the party, the position of fact is very clear. We are looking for prime minister with executive power, and we will not accept it. That's why we came to Pagak to discuss it clearly with all the membership of the movement.
How about your military commanders? We are hearing that your forces are still active, attacking government forces. Today there was a report that your forces attacked a government post in PG County, and a lot of people were killed. Are you still fighting and also negotiating?
No, actually, we are still up to now, we are in defense position, because the government, as you know, they attacked our position in Unity State last week. Also, they captured from in Fine Jack in Jungle State. And also, moving, we are getting some support from Atanal, Galashel, Fayam. They are moving towards Ulang County in Upper Nile State. Also, there is a move around Jungle State. They want to attack areas of Akobo County so they can control all this area.
After your meeting in Pagak, is this a decisive meeting where after you come from Pagak, you are going to sign a document that will put an end to this fighting?
Actually, from the top of leadership of the movement, we agree that the peace is the best way to bring stability in South Sudan.
That's SPLM in opposition deputy spokesperson Manoah Peter-Gadkwot speaking to me via satellite phone from Pagak yesterday.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Carter. I would like to talk with you about the heroes all around you. Some of these heroes are people who had Ebola, went to a treatment center, and got better. These people can no longer spread Ebola, and their families and communities can safely welcome them back home. Just as deserving of our respect are the heroes, many of them your neighbors, who fight Ebola every day as nurses, hospital cleaners, burial teams, ambulance drivers, and community health workers. Help and respect these brave people as they do their jobs. Working together, we can stop Ebola.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the President of Sudan calls on UNAMID to leave the country. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are some of the cultural traditions that you still honor?
Cultural traditions like maybe marriage, then like cultural dances, yeah, things like that. Beliefs about certain things, how they happen, some proverbs like that.
Cultural traditions still cherish them, we still honor them. Like when it comes to marriage, we still go through the old traditions like paying the bride price, going to the parents before going to church. Those are still honored.
The way of greeting, still honor it in our tradition. The way of greeting, like kneeling down before an elder.
Some of traditional way of life, like I'm still believing initiation like our culture. So a young man can be initiated to become a mature person.
What do you think?
a daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are still listening to South Sudan in Focus. That story about the president of Sudan calling on UNIMID to leave is not coming in today, but we have several stories for you on gender-based violence in South Sudan. Lucy, back to you.
South Sudan's National Police Service has completed a one-week assessment of special protection police units formed to protect women and children. Police spokesman says rape and adultery are becoming serious problems among communities in South Sudan, and his office is working to address the problem. James Mande Enoka says authorities have received reports of more than 200 cases of rape, adultery and other crimes reported this year in northern and western Baralgazal states. He says communities in these areas are trying to reduce violence against women.
All these two cases were there, were reported in both Western Baralgazal and Northern Baralgazal. And the special unit actually was investigating these kind of cases. For example, in Northern Baralgazal, there were 115 cases reported this year in the special protection unit. And a big number of it were adultery and rape cases.
Locals in Upper Nile, Jonglei and Unity States say the police are not doing enough to protect them. Mande acknowledges the claim and says his office is trying to correct the perception.
Actually, the community lost confidence in the police because they thought that the police did not do enough to protect them. And therefore, the police was not carrying out its mandate.
The police spokesman says his forces are still in need of more tools and training to handle cases in the country. He says when conflict erupted in Juba on the December 15 last year, the police were overwhelmed.
The police did not have the capacity, in fact. And actually, that was armed confrontation. And there were people with super arms and who were able to actually do whatever they could do, and the police could not stop them. That is the fact.
Mande says with the help of UNMISS police, his office will continue to protect civilians. He says that will include protecting internally displaced persons who are too afraid to return to their homes after the violence that broke out.
The police has to work to create a protective environment for all the affected areas so that the IDPs can be encouraged to return. And to do that, they have forced to deploy more police, establish more police stations in all the areas.
The Special Police Protection Unit was established in South Sudan since 2010 to help vulnerable groups. That report was prepared by Michael Atit in Washington.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. United States Secretary of State John Kerry says coalition airstrikes against the Islamic State group have made it much harder for the militants to assemble, travel, and carry out attacks. Kerry spoke today in Brussels, opening a meeting with foreign ministers from 60 coalition partners to discuss efforts to combat the militant group that took over large areas of northern and western Iraq and eastern Syria earlier this year. A suicide car bomber has attacked a United Nations convoy in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, killing at least three people. The attack happened today near the city's heavily secured international airport that is home to foreign embassies and a United Nations base. A UN spokesman said no UN workers were injured or killed in that blast. The militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility, saying in a statement that its fighters had, quote, targeted a convoy of foreign mercenaries and their apostate allies, end quote. And finally, members of a local militia in Nigeria say they disarmed a would-be suicide bomber on her way to the marketplace in the city of Maiduguri in Borno State. The action earlier this week thwarted a second attack in 2 days on the site. Members of the Nigeria vigilante group told reporters they stopped a young woman at a roadblock who was hiding explosives beneath her veil. The militant group Boko Haram has been using young women more and more as suicide bombers. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Ebola is actually a difficult disease to catch. It's not transmitted through the air like the flu. You cannot get it from just riding on a plane or a bus. The only way that a person can contract the disease is by coming into direct contact with the bodily fluids of somebody who is already showing symptoms. We know how to fight this disease. We know the protocols. And we know that when they're followed, they work. And if we take the steps that are necessary, if we're guided by the science, the facts, not fear, then I'm absolutely confident that we can prevent a serious outbreak here in the United States, and we can continue to lead the world in this urgent effort.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
You are still listening to South Sudan in Focus. Tomorrow, the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, is launching a new program in South Sudan to fight violence against women. The program, called Respect and Respond, is being launched at a time when sexual violence is on the rise in South Sudan, largely because of the one-year-old conflict. Karen Zaivogo spoke to the IRC about the new program and what it hopes to achieve.
IRC staff spoke with around 100 women and girls in one of the unmissed protection of civilian sites in South Sudan. They were shocked at what the women told them.
Every single one of them talked about the fact that rape was a serious risk to women and girls, even when they're inside the sites and when they're going outside of the sites. And they talked about rape being used by all parties to the conflict.
That was Melanie Teff. She's a senior advocacy coordinator for the IRC's emergency team. She says women and girls in South Sudan are being attacked as they go about the most mundane daily activities.
We have been told of stories of women who have been assaulted when using latrines that don't have doors that lock. Also, as is often the case in humanitarian operations, the families are given food in the form of sorghum, and women end up having to take great risks to go and get that sorghum ground. They often have to go out of a safe place to an unsafe place where there's a grinding mill, and also to take risks to get the money to be able to pay for grinding. And then they also have to go and take risks to go get firewood.
Domestic violence, rape, child marriage, all are considered forms of sexual violence. In South Sudan, the year-old conflict has made violence against women and girls worse, Teff says.
Even before this conflict, there have been many problems for women facing gender-based violence in South Sudan. This is not a problem that has started with this conflict, but it has been exacerbated by this conflict very seriously.
Pamela Tuyot is a senior manager for the IRC's Women's Protection and Empowerment Program. When it comes to gender-based violence, she says South Sudan also has cultural and structural problems to overcome.
There's a culture of silence around them reporting and people coming up. You know, there's also a challenge in terms of services that are available to address that all over the country.
A program to fight gender-based violence in South Sudan that the IRC has been running since 2012 is coming to an end this year. But violence against women and girls is nowhere near to being a thing of the past in South Sudan. In fact, Teffin Tuyot say it is on the rise. So the IRC has been working with the government to put together a new program, Respect and Respond. That will be launched tomorrow.
What we're trying to do with the campaign is to tell people, you know, you need to speak up about it. You need health services to be treated. You need, you also need psychosocial support, and it's nothing shameful, and it's not your fault, and survivors should not be blamed.
Respect and Respond plans to work with communities in South Sudan
to raise awareness, to do a media campaign, to engage elders, to engage police in terms of promoting positive norms for change, because not majority of the men that commit the violence, but we want to make sure that this violence that is there, that people begin to understand, and also that survivors themselves, the women, begin to speak up.
And there's a special message for the police, too.
The campaign just urges the police to respect and not to blame survivors and to support survivors.
The IRC has been working for 5 years with CARE International and George Washington University in the United States to shed more light on what kind of violence women in South Sudan experience, how widespread it is, and how many women are affected. It expects to release the findings of the research next year. One thing is for sure, Tuyotintep say, with the start of the conflict a year ago, violence against women has gone up, way up. As Tef puts it, South Sudan has become
one of the more dangerous places in the world to be a woman at the moment.
Respect and Respond is one attempt to change that. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
Respect and Respond will be launched tomorrow at Nyakurun Cultural Center in Juba. The festivities start at 10 a.m. in the morning and will include a performance by Emmanuel Kembe and Winnie Justin Kletu, who will be performing a Respect and Respond theme song they have written.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. Let's now enjoy the new song, Respect and Respond.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and Winnie Justin with the song Respect and Respond. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.